that comes out of it. Go back to Apple's 1984 commercial at the beginning of Chapter 9. For those who have seen it, does it make you think about Apple and its products? Or do you simply like the sentiment? Or the line, "Think different"? Does it speak to you? If you're a Mac customer, you probably loved this commercial. It may even give you goosebumps when you watch it, a surefire test that the why is connecting with you on a visceral, limbic level. In fact, this commercial, after you've learned it was from Apple, may have reinforced your decision to buy a Mac, whether for the first time or the 10th time. This commercial, like all Apple's advertising, is one of the things Apple has said or done that reinforces what they believe. It is every bit consistent with the clear belief we know they embody. And if the commercial speaks to you and you're not an Apple lover, odds are you still like the idea of thinking differently. The message of that ad is one of the things Apple does to tell their story. It is one of the what's to their why. It is a symbol. It is for these reasons that we say of a piece of advertising, quote, "It really speaks to me." It's not really speaking to you. It's speaking to the millions of people who saw the ad. When we say that something like that speaks to me, what we're really saying is, through all this clutter and noise, I can hear that. I can hear it and I will listen. This is what it means for a message that comes out of a megaphone to resonate. Everything that comes out of the base of the megaphone serves as a way for an organization to articulate what it believes. What a company says and does are the means by which the company speaks. Too many companies put a disproportionate amount of weight on their products or services simply because those are the things that bring in the money. But there are many more things at the base of the megaphone that play an equal role in speaking to the outside world. Though products may drive sales, they alone cannot create loyalty. In fact, a company can create loyalty among people who aren't even customers. I spoke favorably of Apple long before I bought one, and I spoke disparagingly of a certain PC brand, even though I'd been buying their product for years. Apple's clarity, discipline, and consistency, their ability to build a megaphone, not a company, that is clear and loud, is what has given them the ability to command such loyalty. They are accused of having a cult-like following. Those inside the company are often accused of following the cult of Steve. All of these compliments or insults are indications that others have taken on the cause and made it their own. That experts describe their product and marketing as a lifestyle reinforces that people who love Apple products are using what Apple does to demonstrate their own personal identity. We call it lifestyle marketing because people have integrated commercial products into the style of their lives. Apple, with great efficiency, built a perfectly clear megaphone, leveraged the law of diffusion, and invited others to help spread the gospel, not for the company, for themselves. Even their promotions and partnerships serve as tangible proof of what they believe. In 2003 and 2004, Apple ran a promotion for iTunes with Pepsi, the cola branded as the choice of the next generation. It made sense that Apple would do a deal with Pepsi, the primary challenger to Coca-Cola, the status quo. Everything Apple does, everything they say and do, serves as tangible proof of what they believe. The reason I use Apple so extensively throughout this book is that Apple is so disciplined in how they do things and so consistent in what they do that, love them or hate them, we all have a sense of why. We know what they believe. Most of us didn't read books about them. We don't personally know Steve Jobs. We haven't spent time roaming the halls of Apple's headquarters to get to know their culture. The clarity we have for what Apple believes comes from one place and one place only: Apple. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And Apple says and does only the things they believe. If what you do doesn't prove what you believe, then no one will know your why. And you'll be forced to compete on price, service, quality, features, and benefits, the stuff of commodities. Apple has a clear and loud megaphone and is exceptionally good at communicating its story. The celery test. In order to improve how and what we do, we constantly look to what others are doing. We attend conferences, read books, talk to friends and colleagues to get their input and advice, and sometimes we are also the dispensers of advice. We are in pursuit of understanding the best practices of others to help guide us. But it is a flawed assumption that what works for one organization will work for another. Even if the industry's sizes and market conditions are exactly the same, the notion that if it's good for them, it's good for us, is simply not true. I know a company with an amazing culture. When asked, the employees say they love that all the conference rooms have ping pong tables in them. Does that mean if you were to put a ping pong table in all your conference rooms, your culture would improve? Of course not. But this is an example of best practices. The idea that copying what or how things are done at other high-performing organizations will inherently work for you is just not true. Like the Ferrari and the Honda, what is good for one person or one company is not necessarily good for another. Put simply, best practices are not always best. It is not just what or how you do things that matters. What matters more is that what and how you do things is consistent with your why. Only then will your practices indeed be best. There is nothing inherently wrong with looking to others to learn what they do. The challenge is knowing what practices or advice to follow. Fortunately, there is a simple test you can apply to find out exactly what and how is right for you. It's a simple metaphor called the celery test. Imagine you go to a dinner party and somebody comes up to you and says, "You know what you need in your organization? M&Ms. If you're not using M&Ms in your business, you're leaving money on the table." Somebody else comes up to you and says, "You know what you need? Rice milk. The data shows that all the people are buying rice milk these days. You should be selling rice milk in this economy." While you're standing over by the punch bowl, yet another person offers you some sage advice. "Oreo cookies," he says. "We made millions from implementing Oreos in our organization. You've got to do it." Still, somebody else comes up to you and says, "Celery. Gotta get into celery." You get all this great advice from all these highly accomplished people. Some of them are even in the same industry. Some of them are more successful than you. Some of them have offered similar advice to others with great success. Now what do? You go to the supermarket and you buy celery, rice milk, Oreos, and M&Ms. You spend a lot of time at the supermarket. You spend a lot of money at the supermarket because you bought everything. But you may or may not get any value from some or all of these products. There are no guarantees. Worse, if you're budget constrained, you had to whittle down your choices again, and then which did you choose? But one thing's for sure. When you're standing in line at the supermarket, with all these items in your arms, your celery, rice milk, Oreos, and M&Ms, nobody can see what you believe. What you do is supposed to serve as the tangible proof of what you believe, but you bought